Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Absolutely super, Ron. Up here in Michigan, it's kind of gray, but it's a typical Michigan day. How are you?
Doing fine, and it's wonderful weather down here in Atlanta.
Well, yeah, rub it in. You always do.
That's right. Welcome to the sunny south. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that our listeners, entrepreneurs, can successfully navigate their launch. And this morning we'll be featuring Leslie Cuban of FranNet of Georgia. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, you know, franchise ownership can be personally, professionally, and financially rewarding if you know what you're doing. And franchise owner Leslie Cuban will discuss the critical issues with us today to address when you're looking at franchises and doing your due diligence to ensure that you make a successful decision and get a real good match. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. Well, franchising, I know it's not for everybody, but for some people it's absolutely perfect. So how does the franchisor sustain itself financially?
Sure. And there's a series of questions that anyone would want to ask if they're going to pursue a franchise business. And what's in it for the franchisor, the parent company, growing their business through franchising is something that would be important for anyone to understand. And let me first answer that by how they should not be making their money, which is off of the sale of new franchises, that a franchisor is going to charge an upfront franchise fee. And in best case scenarios, franchisors are breaking even on that. That's not a profit center for them. It's very expensive to be a franchisor and grow and expand and support a franchise organization successfully. So where a franchisor is, it can come from a couple of ways, but primarily it should come from ongoing royalties. That once a franchise owner is up and running and they're creating revenue, a franchisor is going to get a piece of that revenue, somewhere between 4% and 8% is typical. So it's only a lucrative endeavor for the franchisor after the franchisees are becoming successful financially within their businesses. So
it's a win-win arrangement that the franchisor makes money because the franchisees are making money.
Right. But there are franchises out there that, I mean, they're bootstrapping, that the way they're able to stay afloat is they have to continue to sell franchises. And that upfront franchise fee is paying for their ongoing operations. And that's not how it should be. That either from their company units, or sometimes they sell products or services to the franchisees. And that's okay as long as the prices that they're charging are competitive. So either in those scenarios or royalties is really where the revenue should be coming from, to where the franchise organization is supporting itself.
Okay.
Leslie, what is the franchisor's succession plan and the franchisee's succession plan requirements then?
Yeah, that is another important issue that what I would say become more poignant when a person is exploring a franchise that may have been in business for a while but is new to franchising. That they're learning, they may know their business, but now they're learning how to be a franchisor. And in younger franchise companies, like that, the founder of the business is still typically the leader of the whole organization. He's the center of the whole thing, the focal point. And what if he gets hit by a banana bus or a banana boat? Banana truck. That's what I was looking for. We have an old joke in business brokerage about what happens when you get hit by a banana truck. But if he gets a heart attack or he's no longer with us suddenly, what's the succession plan? I mean, what is plan B for someone who understands the business and all the nuances of it and who has a strong financial interest in it, and who's taking their place? Usually as a franchise organization matures and grows, management silos appear. I mean, it looks like more of a larger, well-organized company, and those succession issues usually are less of an issue. But there's a lot of young franchise companies out there where the founder is still the leader of the organization. So that's where that might become an issue. And a franchisor has a say-so in the transfer of the businesses. That a person, you can't just sell your franchise to anyone you want to. That if you're leaving, at some point a person's going to sell their business. and or they're going to leave their business, or they're going to retire, or they're going to pass on. And so there's going to be a succession plan with your business. And maybe you want to involve an adult child in the business, or a spouse. But a franchisor will have a say-so in who takes over that business. And it's going to be defined in the franchise agreement. And a person needs to know what that looks like and not just assume that they're able to do whatever what they want with the business.
Okay. Well, kind of on a side note, you talked about the banana truck. It reminded me, the singer that wrote the song Cats in the Cradle actually wrote a song called 50,000 Pounds of Bananas. And it's a timed song where the rhythm changes as this truck is going up this incredibly steep hill. Okay, and so the song's kind of slow, and then it starts going down the hill, and he loses his brakes. Okay, and it ends up that the truck turns over, and there's 50,000 pounds of bananas everywhere. So if you were at the bottom of that hill, you might have gotten hit by the banana truck. It was actually a truck carrying bananas.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but you know, a lot of times when you look at the franchise agreement, and you say, think about, well, the signage is going to have to be, you know, consistent. You know, the uniforms are going to have to be consistent. You know, is there anything in a franchise agreement that's negotiable?
Good question. And the more negotiable, younger franchises may be more willing to negotiate certain parts of their franchise agreement. There's certain things that they really probably are not going to, such as franchise fees, royalties. That's actually quite unfair, that if a franchise is offering one deal to one person and then another deal to another person, I mean, that sets up a, you know, potential legal situation. But especially when they're younger, there may be some room for negotiation around size of territory, or when you start paying the royalties, there may be some flexibility around that. I mean, the short answer, Ron, is no, that, you know, it's a standard agreement, and a franchisor can't have 100 franchisees with 100 different agreements with different terms to it. And the more mature the organization gets, the less likely they're going to be willing to do some wheeling and dealing, but perhaps when they're younger in their life cycle.
Okay.
Well, see, one of the things I noticed when I've looked into different franchises is that they don't share their income and earnings information very easily. Occasionally you can get some information. Why is that?
Good. And more franchisors are starting to provide some degree of earnings information, and it would be contained in Section 19 of their disclosure documents. One point I'd like to make about that is it's never the whole story. I mean, even when a franchisor is providing earnings information, it's a data point, but it never should be something that someone pursuing that franchise just solely relies on. It's one data point. They should still go out and talk to 8, 10, 12, maybe more other franchise owners who are already in that business and collect financial information from them, as well as a lot of other types of information. So whatever, and more franchisors are starting to provide the earnings claims. There are some compliance issues around that the Federal Trade Commission does regulate how a franchisor can offer earnings information in their disclosure document. And sometimes if it's a young franchise that's really growing quickly, they may not be able to comply with some of those regulations, but most of them can. And the reason they would not is that there's just a lot of attorneys out there and people who, if they're not doing well in their business, it's not their fault. It's never their fault. And it's mitigating a potential legal risk. Is at the end of the day, that would be the main reason why most franchises are not offering earnings information.
And there's a lot of different state laws, too, isn't there? State to state, not just federal?
There are 14 states that require an added layer of registration, which really, I don't know, quite frankly, if it offers any additional protection to franchise candidates in that state, in those states. Georgia is not one of them. It creates added paperwork and bureaucracy, in my opinion. But they don't offer a policing organization that is out there looking at disclosure documents and making sure that they're up to speed. So, yes, but personally, I don't know how valuable that is.
Okay. Right. Well, if a person is starting out, you know, as an entrepreneur, and they're looking at their different options, and of course, you know, as an entrepreneur, you want to be making some money. How does an entrepreneur figure out if a franchise is financially viable for themselves?
Well, I started to talk a little bit about that the main source of revenue and income information will come from going out and talk to other people who own those franchises. And it's sometimes that's surprising to people that you know people would be willing to share that level of information. But I think people have to remember that most people who own franchises these days are coming out of corporate careers. You know, they were nervous and they were scared about making a going into a business, especially when that's something that they've never done before. And they were on that same path that you're on at that point, asking those same questions of other people. So if a person is respectful and prepared and they're calling on franchise owners to ask about all elements of their business, including what kind of income potential does this business have, then I think that they'll find, if they go about it the right way, that franchisees will be very helpful. They'll be very open in helping a person understand what kind of working capital needs that they'll have going into that business. What are the various financial variables involved? How long is it going to take to achieve a certain level of income based on their experience and research that they have done into the business? So that's the main source where people are going to get income, cost, equity value of the business type of information. There are resources that we have a wonderful Small Business Development Center network here in Georgia that it's our tax dollars being put to wonderful use, in my opinion, that anyone exploring any kind of business, franchise or otherwise, can schedule an appointment and work with one of their consultants that help build three-year cash flow projections and business plans. There's no added cost to go in and utilize these services, and they've got really, really good people with good backgrounds who know how to do these types of services. So that's a resource to help. But and the franchisor can offer a lot of information on costs and amount of working capital that you may need. So it's really a combination of these various sources that someone will figure out, where's the money?
Right. Well, you know, in addition to the money, I know one franchise owner that when he was doing his investigation several years ago, he went and, like you said, do his due diligence, talked to different existing owners of it. And he actually volunteered and went and worked for free at a particular franchise to see how he enjoyed it. In mm-hmm. addition to the money, he's like, do I like doing this? And he came back and says, I love this. This is a perfect fit for me. And, went and got the franchise and did quite well. But he actually worked at it for 3 months for free.
Good. That's certainly a way to live and breathe the business and know what you're getting into.
Right. You know, Leslie, other than doing that, and I looked at franchises too in the past, like I mentioned, and how do you decide what's the best franchise to go into besides just going and working at one?
Well, I think there's a methodology and process to answering that exact question, Bill. And where I would suggest, you can certainly start by getting a sense of the overall universe of what are the options that are out there by going to franchise.org, which is the International Franchise Association's website. Entrepreneur Magazine puts out a top 500 franchise list. There's all kinds of resources that someone can utilize to just get a sense of what are the overall scope of opportunities. But I don't think any of those sources can really help someone figure out, is that the best one for me? And that's really the key. It's finding a business that is right for you as an individual. It may be a hot, popular franchise, but if you don't have the skills to run it, if it's not going to give you the lifestyle or quality of life or schedule or income or future exit strategy that you would like to have for yourself, then it doesn't matter if it's a hot, popular franchise that's growing by leaps and bounds all over the place. So the methodology starts with a very personal one. It's identifying what your transferable skill sets are, what your needs and objectives are from owning any business, franchise or otherwise. Who all is involved? Is it just you? Is it your spouse? Is it an adult child? Their skills and talents and opinions are an influence on what choices one should consider. So it's really building a personal list of characteristics and qualities and outcomes that you would like to have in a business, and then start shopping for opportunities and only focus on those businesses and franchise that fit your list.
Fascinating. Well, as you're looking at choosing a franchise business, I'm sure some people, make the right decision, but others, they mess up. What's the biggest mistake people make when choosing a franchise business?
Yeah, and this, I wish I heard fewer stories around this, but at the end of the day, there's a couple of things that people do that will set themselves up for not doing well in a business before they even open the doors of the business. And they choose it for the wrong reason in the first place. And I'll give you a couple of examples that that someone may fall in love with the idea of owning a certain kind of business. They may love the product or service, perhaps as a customer of that kind of business. But the reality of running it and what kind of skills a person needs to come into that business with and what kind of hours it requires or what kind of outcomes financially it's going to give you have nothing to do with if you love it as a product or service. So that's a big mistake that people make is they love dogs and they love animals. So they think that that's the right reason to open a doggy daycare kind of business or franchise. And that may be the furthest thing from the truth. Another thing that people will do to set themselves up for not doing well or choosing the wrong thing in the first place is they underestimate the amount of marketing that is needed for even a branded retail franchise. And I learned this. My first franchise was the Mailboxes, Etc. in the mid-90s, and I had my own store in Marietta. And I also worked with a lot of other franchisees here in Atlanta in their stores that they would have me come in to help them with training new employees or opening new locations if they were expanding. If a manager quit suddenly, I would come in and help them patch it over until they could find a replacement. And it was so interesting to see some owners were very successful, had great businesses, and others in the same franchise, in the same city, were really struggling. And when I looked at the folks who were struggling, if I could pin the rose on one issue, it was because they bought this franchise because it is a well-recognized brand name, and they went into a good location, and that was all the marketing that they ever did for their business. They just assumed, I'll build it and the people will come. We were trained to go out and farm our territories, to go out and get involved in the Chamber of Commerce and meet other business owners, to walk into the businesses in strip centers surrounding us and just introduce ourselves and let other business owners know that we were there.
Hey, we're here.
We're here. We'd love to help. We're not talking about being obnoxious or cold calling. It's just, it was very, it was easy. It wasn't any big deal. But these owners, for a lot of different reasons, just wouldn't do it. And they assumed if I buy this brand name franchise and go into a great location, that's my business development strategy. And that's all I have to do.
And it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So you can't rely.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that would be kind of a fallacy that people have about franchising, that brand equals success. It can help with success, but you have to show up to the party as well.
Have you ever run across anybody that failed with one franchise concept and was wildly successful with another?
I'm thinking about that. I can't think of an example of that, Bill. Unfortunately, if someone gets burned the first time around, their likelihood in any time frame soon to try something else, I can't think of an example.
Yeah, and probably the underlying causes of why they failed would transfer to another franchise that they would go to.
Well, I actually don't think so, Ron. That people, again, because they buy it for a certain reason. Mm-hmm. Like if someone, for example, has really good marketing and sales skills, I mean that's what the background they're coming from. They would probably be a really good fit in some kind of business services type of franchise, a temporary staffing company or a IT managed services type of franchise or a commercial sign manufacturing company. There's successful franchises in those and many other types of business to business. And the people who are really well wired for those kinds of businesses come from corporate sales and marketing backgrounds. And in none of those businesses do you have a lot of employees, that it's not a heavy on the management and operations side of it. So if someone with a good management and operations background came to one of those businesses, they might not do so well because what the owner really just needs to do is sales and marketing versus things like hair salons or food service or cleaning companies are more oriented towards a focus on the management and operations role. So So, I mean, yes, someone with a certain, it's a matter of finding the business that really plays to your strengths. And different businesses are going to be very different in that regard.
Well, I don't know if this is still true, but I read many, many years ago that, you know, to get a McDonald's franchise, you had to go up to Chicago to Hamburger University and do a lot of training. And the whole item was to find out, do you have ketchup in your blood? Okay.
Yep.
Is it a good fit?
You know. Yep. Actually, that's the one category where in a lot of franchises, you don't need to have any prior industry background. But I would say that's not true with food. Food would be the one category that a lot of franchisors are looking for, people that have food service or food management type of background.
Right.
Because it's probably the most complicated and complex of all the businesses that I've ever seen and work with.
Yeah. I know a business owner here in Atlanta that he built his own restaurant and absolutely loved it. And every now and then he would come out from the kitchen as the owner and just, you know, people would be eating. He's just like, I love this place. I mean, he was just pumped, you know, being a restaurant owner.
That's great.
And every aspect of it. He was just excited about it.
Yep. I love those stories. That's great.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So
how are people capitalizing on franchises these days, Leslie?
You know, the good news is that there is a lot more opportunity for small business financing from traditional sources, SBA financing, commercial financing, than there were a year ago. The bad news is that the purse strings are still very tight at the bank. Most people are not funding their startups through an SBA loan or a conventional bank loan. I mean, most people, especially if they're not businesses that take an arm and a leg to capitalize, most people are self-financing through cash that they have, you know, severance packages if they're leaving through a transition. The most popular way that I'm seeing, at least in part, is what's called a self-directed retirement plan. And this is a strategy where people can utilize assets in a 401k or an IRA, debt-free, tax-free, penalty-free. Actually, there's a lot of advantages to it, but it's really important that a person work with a specialist in that form of financing. And there are specialists out there. Your accountant, your financial advisor is typically not that specialist. They're not going to have the breadth of knowledge around how that needs to work. So it would be important to make sure you're hooking up with an outfit that really specializes in that type of financing to utilize that correctly.
When you talk about the importance of marketing, I know a business owner here in Atlanta that's been hugely successful with a whole series of restaurants in different fields. He owns a wholesale business. He owns a bank. You know, he's been very successful. But his very first venture as a mechanical engineer from Georgia Tech was to open up a little restaurant on Jimmy Carter. And he told me that when he first opened it up, nobody came. He said the waiters were sleeping on the tables.
Oh, no.
It was that bad. Nobody, zero people came into it. He finally put on a gorilla suit with a sign walking up and down Jimmy Carter to start generating some business to it. And then from there it took off, and he from those humble beginnings, and I saw him recently at an event, and he said, because of the economy and everything, he says, maybe I need to put that gorilla suit on again. But he did his own marketing.
Yeah,
you know? He had to, because nobody was coming into the restaurant. Nobody knew it was there.
Yep, I think anyone considering starting any business, franchise, you know, a startup entrepreneurial company, doing consulting, even buying someone's existing business, that no matter what, you as the owner, your main job is creating customers.
Right.
Period. And if you're so uncomfortable or afraid to step into some form of a sales and marketing role, I don't know that person should be looking at being in their own business. I have not seen any business where the owner does not need to be involved in whatever it takes to get customers for
right.
the business.
Yeah, and that's what you do, right, Bill? Sales and marketing?
Well, that's for sure. I'm always looking for new customers.
That's right. Well, Leslie, you know, people in franchising say that franchise business ownership is less risky than independent entrepreneurship. Is that really true?
I'm biased, Ron. I mean, I've made a career out of owning franchise businesses for 15 years. My family has owned franchise businesses for 30 years. So we're definitely examples of when franchising works. So, I mean, it's easy for me to say, yes, I think so. And the example, using myself as an example, you know, I went back, you know, I was just out of college when I started running mailboxes at Cetera stores. I mean, I had my own store. My family helped me get into that business. And there's just no way I could have done that on my own. I mean, there is no way I could have gone and opened Leslie's mail and parcel service. You're doing the exact same thing. The reason I did well with it was because I was trained from A to Z on how to run that business. And whenever I needed help, and I needed it a lot, and I needed it every day in the first few months where I was learning how to run that business, there was someone who always answered the phone within the support services. There were multiple people that I could call, including other franchise owners. And for me, that's one of the bigger benefits of that mitigates the risk is not only is there a parent company that, you know, my royalties are supposedly, you know, paying for to be there for me for support, but there's a whole network of other people doing the business in the exact same way that I am, that we're a team. I mean, we all have the same goal is to grow and succeed in our businesses. So without those things in place, that there's no way I could have ever pulled that off and made that happen. And the same is true today. I mean, I'm here, you know, I've been in my current franchise for 12 years now. And again, there's a whole network of other people, the franchisor and the franchisees, that I call on and utilize regularly. We support each other. We bounce ideas off of each other. And so to me, all of those things add to, I think, minimizing the risk that can be involved in your own business when you're out there doing it on your own. And you're certainly not going to go to a competitor to ask for them advice on how do I succeed and grow in this business. Maybe you would, but I don't know that would be there may be an easier way to go about that.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about Frannet and exactly how that works.
Sure. Well, Frannet is a company and organization that's been in business for over 20 years. We service prospective franchisees as well as franchisors. There's a group of franchisors, a little over 100, that we're now working with in different industries and different price ranges that employ our company to help them grow in the United States and Canada. And we're actually expanding internationally now. I'm excited about that. To grow and succeed as a franchise organization by helping them to recruit franchisees who have the right skill sets, the right financial qualifications, that are wired the right way to succeed in their particular franchise businesses. So we're kind of in an executive search firm for many of the better franchise companies out there. And where I spend my time, you know, I'm here locally in Georgia. I've been in this business here for 12 years now, and I am working on the other side with the prospective franchisees. You know, and these are, you know, mostly people coming from corporate careers that you know, want to be in their own business. They want more independence. They want more control. They have never done this before, and so they don't know how to go about it. So I give seminars every month here, twice a month at least, in Atlanta. That's great for people kicking tires and looking for information about, you know, what do I need to know about franchising if that's a strategy of business ownership that they want to learn more about. And then for those people who want to take a serious stab at this, that they want to really know what are the choices that make sense for me based on my needs and my goals and my skills and what I want to happen for myself, that's where I work with people individually to explore their choices and coach them through a system of due diligence. And I think that's, if I have to pick one area where I think I add the most value, it's helping figure out, who've never done this before and don't even know what questions to ask, is to really walk them through the ABCs. If you're going to research any franchise, you know, these are the steps that you need to follow to thoroughly understand it and make intelligent yes or no decisions to that business.
Yeah, and it's my understanding that there's no charge to the prospective franchisees.
Right. Our fees come from the franchise companies. That if someone I'm helping explore their options chooses to move ahead with one of those franchises, we have a national contract with that franchisor that will pay us to do that. So no, there are no fees associated with my classes or in the coaching that I work with people. I can't help everybody though. That I'm only gonna work with someone that I feel I can really help. And if I can't help them, I'll tell them that and tell them why. And I actually get just as many referrals from those folks who say thank you for helping me avoid a really bad decision.
True. Yeah.
I agree with you, Leslie. Too. I think franchising is less risky. You know, I started both businesses, but my family, my dad, started in the restaurant industry and franchised a whole bunch of big boys in Michigan.
Ah, okay.
And
I've been there.
You know, Sure. In fact, I stop by one every time I go into Michigan. I always have to get a big boy and fries and coleslaw and the
milkshakes.
Hot fudge ice cream cake at about 1,200 calories later, I'm done. Fortunately, I don't go there all the time. But it's much easier, and I think where I saw the value of it is the mistakes that I've made with my two businesses. If I'd had a franchise business, I wouldn't have made those mistakes because they've already probably been made.
Right. The mistakes cost money and time, don't they, Bill?
Yep, they really, really do. And I look back, I would, if I could have found something similar, I would have been farther along than I am now had I been a franchisee.
Yep. I think that's a good way to put it, that at the end of the day, it's worth, in my opinion, for myself, it's worth it to pay that upfront franchise fee because it shortens the learning curve and helps me get to an end point of growing a business that I can then sell or back away from in a much shorter time frame without making costly mistakes in time or money all along the way. It's a quicker pathway to an attractive result, is my opinion and experience.
Well, Bill, you're
shortens the learning curve. I just wrote that down. That's the perfect line.
Feel free to use it.
That's right. Bill, you're bringing back memories of my college days with the big boy. We had a list of where the cheapest food was on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. There were no places for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And in Memphis, Tennessee, where I went to college, the Shoney's Big Boy had their big boys half price on Tuesdays. I think that was their slow day. But we absolutely packed the place with college students. And instead of getting just one big boy at half price, we got two big boys for the price of one, which probably was our strategy. but we did it every Tuesday for 4 years. Okay.
My college story about big boys is that my friends one time went up to Mount Pleasant, Michigan. That's where one of my dad's stores was. They didn't realize it was my dad's store. Leslie knows where that is. They stole the big boy.
Oh, my.
They came back and put it in our fraternity house. And I said, where did you guys get that? And they told me, and I said, you've got to take that back. I explained it was my dad's store. And everybody thought it was funny. They took it back, and I don't think anybody ever knew it was gone. I got really lucky.
What a trophy.
That's hilarious.
From somebody else's big boy, not my dad.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Leslie, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
I just launched a blog, and I would love for anyone who has interest in hearing more. I write mostly about franchising, but actually the topic of the blog is Logic Does Not Apply. And it's not only about franchising. I'm working with over 1,000 people and helping 250 people into business. What works and what makes sense oftentimes does not seem logical at the very beginning. So that was the genesis of this theme for my blog, and it's LeslieCuban.com is the way to get to the blog. You can reach me online also at Frannet.com, and my phone number is 770-579-3726.
I like the title of your blog, Logic Does Not Apply. I always tell people, hey, it's counterintuitive. Just trust me. Okay?
Yep.
All right. Well, this has been super, Leslie. It's been great having you on our show. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and your wisdom in this area. It's really some golden nuggets.
Well, this is fun for me, so thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Another great show, Bill.
Oh, Ron, it was great. In fact, I've already taken a look at Leslie's blog, and it sure nails it. Logic does not apply at all. I want to also give a special thanks today to our sponsor, Patents and More, your trusted guides through the innovation jungle.
And you can listen again to today's show, plus previous shows, at our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.